Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. When I'm cycling, my brain goes to some interesting places. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's advanced program. I'm Linda, your host. We are continuing with our lifestyle article. It is the third day of a three-day article. Today is July 8th, and our article is The Thrill of Cycling in Silence. We are back for our final day of this cycling journey, and continuing on this journey with us is Peter. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Linda. Hello, everyone.
Yeah, so we've been talking about how our author rides in silence. He can go on 3-month long bike rides and not listen to any music, any podcast, any audiobook. And it's great. And we have been learning about the advantages of and the reasons of not listening to any media on the bicycle.
Right. Because as you said at the outset, his brain goes to some interesting places when he turns off media for several hours on end as he's biking across the country.
Yeah. So what is one of the advantages of unplugging?
Right. Well, partly it's, of course, practical. You want to think about safety. You want to be able to hear approaching vehicles behind you. You want to be able to hear the thrum of their engines. Thrum just meaning a slow, steady sound like an engine, so that when they whoosh past you, you're ready for it and you're not thrown off by that sudden rush of air, much less hit by the vehicle in some way.
Right.
So, yeah, not wearing earbuds, not listening to music during that time has a practical benefit right off the top.
Right. You can focus. And it's also a feast for the senses, right? On the bicycle, you get so much stimulation, and that's enough to keep you occupied, to keep you entertained, because yesterday we heard about the sounds and sights that he gets on the bicycle, right? There are many things to see, ornate graffiti on the walls or under railway underpasses, snippets of music or conversations that he hears, and then just seeing these just maybe awe-inspiring sights just riding through the countryside.
Right, and he'll share a few more of those sights in the countryside in our article today. Yesterday, he was talking more about things that get his attention in the city. He mentioned graffiti. Something that we don't want to see on the side of our own building, but that sometimes catches our eyes when we see it spray-painted on the side of other buildings or warehouses or some kind. And also corroded architecture he would see on the outsides of, on the outskirts of town. Corroded meaning something that's slowly being destroyed by the effect of water and wind and chemicals over time. And there, we talked about how there's sort of a dark beauty sometimes to old factories, abandoned factories or buildings, even in their corrosion, they have a kind of fascinating gloom to them.
Yeah. I mean, I like admiring architecture, but decaying architecture has its own beauty as well, because you can kind of try to guess what the history of it was, like maybe who used it. Yeah, there's a beauty to it.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated, just brief note here, by whenever I'm biking or hiking in the woods or the countryside and I see abandoned train tracks. There is something about seeing train tracks that now the grass is growing up through them. They're not used anymore, but the tracks are still there. And just to think that once...
It was used, yeah.
There was a train. A train, you know, came through here. And now, you know, it's all just sort of... It's like looking at old ruins from an ancient civilization of some sort.
It makes you wonder, like, when it was used, like the people who used it, what their lifestyle was. It just
because that's all that's left. The people are gone. The you know, the whatever they did with their lives is gone, but only the train tracks remain.
Right. So he's seeing all of these things, or when we're on the bicycle, we can see these things too. And it causes us to think, like causes us to, for our mind to go to different places. And if we are listening to our headphones, listening to something, we probably wouldn't go to those places that allow us to think. And here in today's program, we're going to hear about the other places or the thoughts that are stimulated by his bike trip and just by the sights and sounds and just being on the bicycle allows him to do. And he's able to meditate on the bicycle, and we'll get into that. But when do you often meditate? Like, in what opportunity or what situation do you tend to meditate?
Well, actually, I used to on my morning commute. I spent my morning commute, I moved recently to a different part of our city here, but previously to that, my morning commute was spent a lot of time on the train, and I would use that time to meditate. I read the Bible each morning, in fact, and I would use that time to meditate on what I'd read there. But also, I would bike, actually. I wouldn't bike anywhere near as long as this guy is, but biking was also part of my former commute. I tend to take buses now more. And when I would bike along one of our rivers here in Taipei, and it would be like suddenly being out in the countryside. Mm-hmm. And I would let my thoughts kind of, you know, just look up at the sky, the clouds, the setting sun, because this is the end of the day, I'm biking home. And just my mind, too, would go to some interesting places.
Yeah. I love the riverside. I love that we have this option to bike on these bike paths, these long bike paths that at which we don't have to worry about traffic. So all of those decisions, those little tiny decisions are cast aside because I'm not forced to make those decisions. So my brain is allowed to go to other places and be able to think and meditate. And I also, on the bicycle, riding along the riverside, I tend to do that too. And we get to see this peaceful setting, right? Like no cars, usually no motorcycles, but sometimes there are motorcycles and maybe the occasional utility truck doing work along the riverside or in the riverside park, but mostly it's without traffic. Just, you know, you still do have to watch out for pedestrians or, you know, the little kid on his tricycle or whatever. So you're always aware, but it does give us this time to think about other things and to meditate. So let's hear what our author has to say on the topic. Let's hear our first reading now.
I saw road signs dented with bullet holes, a swollen river that had swallowed an SUV during a storm swell, and a massive longhorn that stared closely at me as I nervously rode past. Your senses feel like they're constantly engaged in a non-stressed fashion, like your body is constantly taking notes on the world around you. It's a neat interplay of forces. Cycling occupies your forebrain with a welter of tiny decisions, while also feeding your mind with the chill and gorgeous spectacle of the world at large. Together, it seems to loosen up my hindbrain, shifting it into a new and meditative gear.
Okay, so he opens up with a description of more of the sights that he sees and how his senses are stimulated. So he sees roadside signs dented with bullet holes. Right. Somebody's using road signs for target practice. Right.
Although, yeah, a dent isn't necessarily a hole. It's just where there's the surface of something is bent inwards. Like a car, if you have a minor collision with a car, the car might be dented. And it's not necessarily a hole, but it is a noticeable inward bent in the surface of the car or the sign in this case.
Mm. He also sees a swollen river that has swallowed an SUV during a storm swell. So probably what remains of a car, a sport utility vehicle, during a serious storm that got taken in the storm swell.
Some nice alliteration there, too.
Yeah,
a swollen river that had swallowed an SUV during a storm swell.
Yes.
Three SW words.
He also sees a living creature a massive longhorn.
I love that picture.
That stared closely at him as he nervously rode past. So a longhorn is a kind of, it's a bovine creature, a cow, with really long horns.
Yeah. Oddly enough.
So, I mean, it is exactly what its name says. And I've seen a longhorn. You have one in your article there, a picture of it. I've seen them in Texas because actually they are, there's the University of Texas Longhorns.
Mm-hmm. So right. They're popular out there.
So they represent, you know, the big university there. I went to a fair. It was the Texas Fair. And yeah, they had longhorns there. And yeah, I was amazed at how long the horns are. Mm-hmm. It was just sitting like it. And plus those are probably very domesticated. So it wouldn't try to charge me or anything. But I can see how intimidating they would be if you stumbled into one like in the wild.
One
that's grazing. So he nervously rode past it and continued. He goes on to say that your senses feel like they're constantly engaged in a non-stressed fashion. So we had touched on that yesterday, making these decisions, right? It was constant and many, but it wasn't exhausting. Same thing with these sights. It was a lot of stimulation, but it wasn't stressful.
Yeah, I love the way he describes it here right after that line. He says, it's like your body is constantly taking notes on the world around you.
Mm-hmm.
Your body, not your mind, or not even your eyes, but your entire body, because all your senses are engaged. It's a feast for the senses,
mm-hmm.
as we said yesterday. And so the wind on your skin, or the smell of something in your nose, or the sound of this, or the sight of that, your entire body is taking notes on the world around you. I like that expression.
Right. And he also goes on to express it in this description. It's a neat interplay of forces, right? Interplay is interaction, right? Interaction of all these forces. Cycling occupies your forebrain, right, with a welter of tiny decisions. And he is talking about, I guess, what is occupying the front of his brain, like what he's thinking about, the immediate. And
right.
So it's this large amount of decisions that he has to make, like watch out for that pothole, like make the turn here, be aware of that sign or, you know, this animal in the road. So it's all these decisions that he's made at the front of his mind, right? While also feeding your mind with the chill and gorgeous spectacle of the world at large. The same time you're making all these decisions, you're also taking in the surrounding area, all the things going on around you.
Yeah, and there's another interesting description there, the chill and gorgeous spectacle of the world at large, because it, you know, the world as that we all live in is, of course, an amazing and multifaceted thing. And so it can be hard to describe in just a few words. But he comes close here by describing it as both chill, you know, it kind of chill in the sense of it wakes you up, not necessarily just cold, but it brings you to attention, but also gorgeous. The chill and gorgeous spectacle of the world at large. Spectacle, something that is very visually impressive.
All right. I was thinking chill was laid back, like used
in
that way.
That too, yeah, to chill and relaxed. And he may mean that. He may have that sense in there too, but just the way he's also been describing how he has to be vigilant and he has all these decisions mm-hmm. to make. And
so you can interpret it in different ways.
Yeah. No, that's the beauty of a poetic expression is it mm-hmm. can have a variety of meanings.
All right. It goes on to say, together, it seems to loosen up my hindbrain, shifting it into a new and meditative gear. All right. So we had this analogy or this imagery on the first day when he was talking to a friend, telling her that he doesn't listen to any media while he's biking. And then he saw the wheels in her brain, right?
Grind to a standstill.
Yeah, come to a stop. So similar here. So his mind is shifting gears, right? Sort of mechanical machinery imagery that's going on here. And he uses forebrain, hindbrain, and scientifically, right, the forebrain is the most advanced part of the brain. That's what has your cerebellum and hypothalamus and thalamus, and it does all of your, you know, the cognitive functions.
Right. Rational thinking and deduction and memory even.
While your hindbrain has the cerebellum and a medulla, and it's more responsible for survival basic functions, like keeping track of your heart rate, making sure your blood pressure is normal, like monitoring all of these things that are basic functions.
Right. So that's the balance.
Yeah. So that's a scientific description of hindbrain and forebrain. But here he's using it more of like, what is at the front of his thoughts, the immediate decisions that he has to make and what he's seeing. And then his hindbrain is like his subconscious, like what the deeper thoughts. And so cycling allows him to access these deeper thoughts or his subconscious and to shift into this meditative gear.
Right.
This meditative mode.
Exactly, yeah, because the hindbrain normally perhaps doesn't think and process like that, like the forebrain. It's just, you know, concerned with, like you said, heart rate, breathing, your sense of balance. But in instances like this, where he's silently biking along for hours at a time, the hindbrain can start to go to some interesting places.
Yeah, I think he's using it more figuratively rather than literally, like the scientific meaning of the parts of your brain. Okay, so let's find out what he's thinking about, what these thoughts are, in our next reading.
Pondering ideas. Often I'd find myself pondering ideas triggered by the world around me, almost without noticing it. I'm meditating on a bigger life issue, some challenge at work, some memory of my late mother, some friend I've been meaning to call, a passage in a book I'd forgotten but that now intrigues me. I often suspect those deep arc of life thoughts rise up precisely because of the curious tripartite mental state of cycling. The top layer of vigilance keeps me focused. The stimulus of the world inspires ideas, while the deep ocean of my latent mind churns quietly until suddenly some aha moment pierces the surface. Now, I don't want to oversell the mental state of cycling in silence. This is not about experiencing soul-shattering eat, pray, love breakthroughs out there in the saddle. I haven't had any Einstein-level insights. It's more like it creates a useful atmosphere in the mind. I come back less jittery, more prepared to handle the everyday thinking of life. Would listening to music or podcasts or audiobooks break that spell? Would it block that sense of flow? I suspect so. In my daily life, I am not about to stop listening to music or stop scrolling around on my phone. I'm a nerd. I love marinating in news and essays about science and technology and culture. But on the road, I need silence.
So what kind of ideas is our author pondering? He often finds himself pondering ideas triggered by the world around him. Almost without noticing it, he's meditating on a bigger life issue, such as
a challenge he's having at work, or a memory of his late mother. I assume maybe other relatives or friends as well. A friend he's been meaning to call, a passage in a book he'd forgotten, but that now intrigues me, he writes. And this is all a good way to understand what it means to ponder something. It means to think about something, but when you ponder something, you sort of think deeply about it and in a sort of relaxed kind of way, too. It's a meditative way of thinking about something, and usually big things like life issues. As he describes here.
You dwell on it, but it's in a non-stressful way.
Right, yeah.
When you're pondering something, you're dwelling on it, you're thinking of it over and over, but yeah, it's not usually in a stressful way.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, these thoughts are coming to him, and in no particular order or priority. They're just the thoughts that he's thinking about because cycling allows him to do this, to get into this meditative state. And he often suspects those deep arc of life thoughts rise up precisely because of the curious tripartite mental state of cycling. And let's first look at arc of life thoughts. He's referring to just the cycle of life, right?
Pretty much, yeah. The arc, a giant curve, or like an arch that our lives take, or that the way we see our lives as some sort of narrative, some sort of arc. This happened at this point, this happened at this point, and you kind of look back on your life and look at these points and see how they fit into the big picture of your life.
Yeah, and it's brought about by the mental state of cycling, and he describes it as tripartite. And this word, we have the prefix tri, we know that is three, so three parts, these three parts of cycling state. And what's the first?
Right, the first is the top layer of vigilance. Keeps me focused, you know, paying attention to the potholes and the broken glass and the other traffic. And then the second layer is the stimulus of the world around him. Just, you know, the factory, the broken factory, or the longhorn, or the river. And then finally, the third layer is the deep ocean of his latent mind. Latent, something that is latent is present but hidden. And that's more what he was getting at by the use of the word hindbrain in our previous paragraph here. The deep ocean of his latent mind churns quietly until suddenly some aha moment pierces the surface. So
right.
Kind of dramatic language here for having an insight, having a discovery, seeing something in a new way.
Yeah. And when something is churning, it's turning, right? So his
turning
mind,
kind of roughly too. Yeah.
It's churning. Something is churning, it's usually will generate something.
Right, right. You think of the ocean churning on a windy day, or, you know, in a storm, the waves don't just turn or go this way and that, they churn, you know, and there's an energy, like you said, connected to that.
Right. I usually think of more like a cyclical movement, like going in a circle, until something happens, right? This aha moment comes to him. And it's not necessarily an epiphany, a giant epiphany, but it's some sort of revelation. And then he gives us a caveat here. He's not saying that he doesn't want to oversell it, right?
Yeah,
that this mental state of cycling and science will bring about soul-shattering eat, pray, love breakthroughs.
Eat, pray, love, Julia Roberts movie based on a very popular book about a woman who rediscovers herself through travel and culture. And there's lots of books like that. There's a particularly popular version of it. And so he's using that just to get across the point that he's not talking about a grand transformation
right.
of his life in some way.
It's not going to be this, yeah, huge transformation. It's this Einstein level
right,
idea or insight, but it's going to be on a smaller scale, right? But it will be some sort of revelation. It's more like it creates a useful atmosphere in the mind, and that allows him to come back less jittery, right? Less nervous, and more prepared to handle the everyday thinking of life. And jitter can also, here it's an adjective, but jitter can also be a verb, meaning to literally shake. So if you are nervous, right, you will tend to shake. So he comes back less jittery, less nervous. And I can totally relate to that. After being on a long bike ride, it's very calming. It's very relaxing. And your mind goes to all of these different places and you do think about these things and you might have these small revelations. So it does allow me to come back to normal everyday life, calmer and more relaxed. So I totally get what he's saying here. So he's wondering, would listening to music or podcasts or audiobooks break that spell?
Yes. Would it block that sense of flow, he says, the tripartite mental flow that he just described? And he says, I suspect so. I suspect it would. He says he's not about to stop listening in his daily life. When he's not biking in his daily life, he's not going to stop listening to music or scrolling around on his phone. He says he's a nerd. And that word can mean any number of things. Usually it means someone who overcomplicates things out of a misguided passion for them. But he basically makes it clear what he says. I love marinating in news and essays about science and technology and culture. I love that word, marinating. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a cooking word originally.
Right. When you marinate a piece of meat or a piece of food, you allow it to soak, like in seasoning, in a mixture, to give it more flavor. So the longer it marinates, the more flavor it will soak up. So, yeah, if you're marinating news and essays about technology and culture and science, like, you're just soaking up all of that information. So he does love to take in information, but on the bicycle is not the best time to do it,
right?
Because that time on the bicycle allows him to think about other things, right? Allows that latent part of his brain or his mind to come to life and to think about things that he normally wouldn't in his day-to-day life. So he ends with, on the road, he needs silence. Yeah. And I totally agree with him, yeah, because it's not really silent. You hear all of the sights and sounds going on around you. Like, it is a real feast for the senses, and you're allows your mind to go to places, to go to very interesting places, and allows you to have small aha moments. So,
yeah.
Again, like I said in the beginning, I totally relate to the author and what he has said in this article. And we hope that you have gained something from this 3-day article. We hope it also encourages you to take a bike ride without listening to any media and see if your latent mind gets churned and you reach an aha moment. But for now, I'm Linda.
I'm Peter.
Saying goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Come back for our next program.